goes here for the first time or so, what are your expectations? Like Brad, I mean. There are a lot of things you could have done on a Friday night.
No, I don't have any expectations, and it's come
You could have went to the movies, right?
Yeah.
Paid, what, $10? What's the movies cost these days? On Friday? $10? Yeah. Use your arm, use the screen. Or what else could you have done? For the pub with the boys?
Yeah, because... Again, going out drinking, but... The bad stuff we're not meant to do.
The bad stuff we're not meant to do, but that gets done anyway?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to do, right? Yeah, this is unfortunate that even when we recognize that certain things aren't productive, still we do it because, well, there's nothing else to do. Power of association also. We have friends and, you know... They say, hey, what are you doing thinking so much about life? Come on out with us, you know. Let's make merry. You know, get high with a little help from your friends. And then what happened then? After that, what? After the pub and you're high with a little help from your friends, then what? I guess I was always curious about pub scenes. I was never a part of it, so I have to hear about it from those who, I don't know, experienced it. I'm sure you didn't come here to hear about that. Everybody seems to already know about that. But I'm just interested in the psychology. I was trying to understand why people do that. I mean, and then it was explained to me that people want to... camaraderie, they want association. Is that so? So we have association here too, but it's for a different purpose. The association we're having now is in discussing the deepest, highest truths of existence. Indeed, that is what the human life is meant for. So, can we offer you a seat somewhere? Are you all right down there? Hey, why not? Can we move? You'll probably get moved by some latecomers. Association, just like you can think of the pub, at the pub, people are drinking, paying for drinks, laughing, joking, as the effects of the alcohol take hold. Yeah, you're looking about, seeing who's there, who's watching you, who's seeing you, and looking for any possible liaisons, see if anybody catches a glint from your eye. Here, we also have association. There's no alcohol flowing. Here, we have the nectar flowing, the nectar of hearing about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now, generally, when you hear something like that, you think, oh, that's so exciting about that. We have that reaction because whatever we know of religion and philosophy is always boring. We never would think that the greatest thrill, the greatest pleasure is to hear about Krishna. We never think that. You see, when you don't know anything high, you're forced to simply dally with the lower thing. And that's the tragedy when Friday night comes around. All you have to look forward to is the lower thing. And people say, well, look, don't blame me. What else is there to do? I have to do something. What we're trying to do here at the Loft is take you higher beyond the realm of matter so that you can understand you're not simply the body, you're not simply the mind, you're spirit soul, and there's supreme soul and a relationship between the two. That opens up a whole unlimited arena of expression for you. You see, as long as you think you're the body and mind, you're constricted, and that's what's troubling you. You're feeling this sense of constriction, restriction. You're hemmed in. But you really don't understand how you're hemmed in. All you know is that things never work out the way they're supposed to. Things look promising sometimes, but the promise is never fulfilled. So you have this gnawing sense of unfulfillment, uncertainty. Therefore, you try to run away from that. How will I hide from this? A good movie, a good pub, go cafe hopping, do some outdoor sports. I just got to get away from this gnawing feeling that no one really knows what's going on. And I just can't seem to find substantial happiness and substantial meaning to life. What we're trying to present here at the Loft is the greatest gift. How to know what real excitement is. How to know what real thrill is. To understand this knowledge, this ancient knowledge, requires that we kind of get beyond the shackles of our present conditioning. Last week, last Friday, those of you who were here, you can remember we were discussing conditioned life. What does it mean that I am conditioned? That means my life is subject to conditions. Although I have plans for being happy and being fulfilled, so many conditions nullify those plans. So we discussed last week that even if you can't see all the conditions that are binding you, certainly you should become aware of the conditions of your body. Everybody likes their body. It's the focus of their life. All right, we talked about the body. The body is actually a bag of conditions. You've been thinking about that? Yes. Do you see anything different? If I say the body is a bag of conditions, what might you say? Oh, well, but there's some good things too, right? Just like, you're how old now? 25. All right, so here I am, based on Bhagavad Gita and common sense, saying that this body is a bag of conditions that are imposed upon you. These conditions are birth, death, disease, and old age. You know, it sounds really unenlivening, doesn't it? Here you are on a Friday night. You could have been at the movies. You could have been at the pub. You're hearing about birth, death, disease, and old age, the conditions of the body. What do you think, Sarah? Doesn't sound very enthusing, does it? Huh? So, now, what would you say? You're 25. Can you see that the body is just a bag of conditions? Or maybe this is something we've overlooked.
You can months ago, but it's hard to believe that you are those conditions.
Can you give an example? Like, it's hard to believe it when you are them?
Well, when your predominant thoughts have been of accepting a conditioned life and a conditioned body, then it's hard to realize that ineffectual.
Not simply. Well, what do you mean by ineffectual, if you could ask it?
It's hard to not be very attached.
Yes. So we were discussing last week, your body goes through phases. You didn't ask for these phases. They're forced on you. That's what's really going on, yet we don't want our attention fixed on these things. We always want our attention focused on the quest for enjoyment, the pursuit of happiness. That's what we want our attention fixed on. So if someone's trying to point out that your body is just a bag of conditions, we say, oh, don't distract me with this. I see something. You got something, a vision in your eyes. I see material happiness. I see a future for me. I see good times. Maybe not all the time, but some of the time. You have that vision in your eyes, and you start moving towards that vision. And as you start moving towards that vision, you're thinking of all the things that are necessary to be done to get that vision. Wow. Yes. I'll work. Yes. I'll earn money. Yes. I'll go through relationships and learn, and I may be frustrated, but I'll keep going. Yes. Yes, I'll do something that society will appreciate me, at least my family and relatives. Yes. I'll do something that will make me appreciate me. Yeah, that's the most important thing. Right? So, what drives you forward? Let's say, just you as an example, you're 25. What's driving you forward?
That ideal, the concept of the ideal life
at the end of life. Okay, but can you, for example, tell us what that ideal is? To do good to everyone in the neighborhood.
Yes, having fulfilling job. Have a nice home.
A nice home.
To have a partner.
To have a partner. Now, certainly an ordinary person would agree these are noble goals. Have a fulfilling job. To have a good home. To have a partner. What would you say, Brad? Sounds...
Mm-hmm. Have lots of fun as well.
Have lots of fun. Now, how do you have lots of fun? Has there been a time in your life when you had lots of fun? Lots of times when you have lots of fun. Has it happened continuously?
No.
Why not? Why does the fun come to an end? Why?
So you appreciate it more.
Oh, I see. The fun, it does you a service by coming to the end, so you can appreciate it more. What kind of fun is that? That has to come to an end so that you will be able to appreciate it. If the fun is so good, why does it just go on and on, increasing at every moment? That's what I call real fun. For example, at the end of this Bhagavad Gita, it's a conversation, a dialogue. At the end, it's stated that hearing this conversation, is a thrill every moment. Now, it would seem to me that real fun is like that. Every moment, it's thrilling. And it doesn't have to end, and then you become, and then you have to experience misery in order to realize, oh, that was really fun. Now I understand that was really fun because I'm miserable now. It's a good thing I'm miserable now because then I really understand. Now I really understand that was really fun. It doesn't sound right, does it? So it was really fun. Why did it end?
Transition to the next stage of fun.
Transition to the...
Just an answer something.
Right, right. But one more question, Rick. Now, take one of those things, one of your fun moments. Can you give us an example of what it was?
It's a long fun moment or just something?
Anything.
Playing with turntables, so DJ at the moment, that's fun for me.
Playing, being a DJ?
Yeah.
Okay. Alright, fine. Everyone would agree this sounds kind of cool, or? Maybe. What do you say? Sounds like kind of cool?
Cool.
You'd like to do that, right?
Different.
Yeah,
it's pretty popular.
Are you a center of attraction at the raves when you're the DJ?
Unfortunately, not.
Huh?
I'm sort of a
guy. No, but if you are a DJ, are you a center of attraction?
From what I sort of might have been to, like, DJs like that, you know.
And everyone's watching them and they're noting their prowess. Oh, he's really good, right? Now, can you do that all the time, nonstop?
No.
Why not? No, but even if you didn't have to work, could you do this DJing and turntabling all the time, straight, continuously? Why not?
Sometimes I'm too tired or lazy.
In other words, you get bored with it after a while.
Yeah, I have to go spend more money on more records.
Because the one... Wait, let's get into it now. He has to. Why does he have to get more CDs? Sarah, what do you think? Yes, but what is that implicit in your statement now? What is there?
Writing makes life better.
But your statement is still implying something about his old CD collection.
Well, it gets spent up a period of time.
It gets stale.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to go to something new, which will also get stale, right?
Possibly. Something gets stale and something doesn't.
Something's?
Gets stale and something doesn't. Like your CDs and collection, which will stay there and will always be popular CDs, younger CDs, that sort of lose there.
Now, the popular ones, the classics that don't fade, and you just listen to them again and again and again and again, play it over and over and over and over and over again.
No,
because
it's in the variety.
Why?
Because it makes things interesting.
It
engages your mind, it continues your mind moving.
But why can't you stay with the same song, the same track on the CD?
Because supposedly it was a song that made you think about things, which probably wouldn't give you a DJ. And if it was, it would make you think about things for a period of time, and then you sort of like cackle about it, and it's nice to move on to think about something else.
But so what you're saying then is it's a limited thing. And you're saying that it doesn't have unlimited potential to attract you.
Not the individual. Perhaps as a whole, like if I took all CDs as a whole, then probably yes, because I could go through and individually look at all these different CDs and individually take things from each of those CDs.
Do you have one track on one CD you can just listen to non-stop, day after day after day?
No, if I have, like, one track that then I
just
do a lot.
No, continuously.
No.
Why not?
Because I would be bored doing anything
continuously. Well, very good. And why? Let's analyze the substances that you're dealing with. I would be bored if I did anything continuously, you said? Why? Is the fault with you or with the things you're doing? Oh.
It's not
a
fault. I think it's
good
things. Why? So it continues me moving on. Like, because if I could, otherwise I'm static.
What's wrong with being static?
There's no movement.
Movement where?
Well, it's just sort of like, it's almost growing stale, really. Like
stale? But, and moving forward, or let's say moving from one track to another is progress?
Possibly,
perhaps
not on the
CD
because that's not really the form of
life.
Yeah.
Oh. I think what we might have been glossing over in your nice comments is that you have to move on because that thing doesn't supply you with continuous pleasure and attraction. If you have to change. It's like juggling, you know? The more things you can juggle, the more fulfilled your life is. But once we stop juggling and let all the things fall to the ground and look at those things, we might see they're actually insubstantial. And that's where the problem lies. I'm chasing things that are insubstantial. I'm chasing things that don't have the potency to satisfy me. Even one of those things.
Things on your level of satisfaction are what you consider satisfaction.
Oh, that's true. Very true.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a pig farm?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You ever study the pigs? Now, what did you think about that level of satisfaction?
Have you been to a pig?
Yeah.
Right. Well.
It's what?
Disgraceful.
Disgraceful?
Yeah, the way in which different things are now is not a way in which it's disgraceful.
Why?
Because they were picked up in a 300-year-old barn.
Yeah. Antique, you know? Restored barn.
No inspiration.
Huh?
No inspiration. No light.
Yeah.
No ear.
But did you look at the life of the pig?
I don't have much life.
What do you mean?
Well, they're born in a cell and they then get removed from the cell because of the trap where they started off and they get chopped off.
Well, the people want to eat them. You don't eat them, huh? Very good, but the people are hungry for flesh. Like, I was walking past a butcher shop today, and I just happened to glance at the adverts outside. I mean, when you really think about it, it's kind of funny in a certain way. You know, rump steak. You just imagine a rump and then a slice out of it. Rump steak. Or shoulder chops. And then a shoulder, and then someone just taking a chop out of it. What else? Boneless chicken legs. And when you really think about it, it's kind of gross, you know? Boneless chicken legs. Doesn't sound very appetizing, does it? What do you think, Brad? Rump steak. And this big rump and then a slice out of it. Sizzling in the frying pan or whatever. However they cook it.
Fortunately, I still do eat meat. So.
Oh, but we're just, you know, we're just discussing these things.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's just, when you say it, you did a picture of the chop in the rump, I picture it in the frying pan.
Right? Shoulder chop, you know. Suppose somebody came up to you and said, We'd like some rump steak. We take a slice out of your rump and broil it. Or chop out of your shoulder.
I wouldn't be touching on fighting, touching on my arm.
All right. So, but back to the subject. Sarah is saying that the pigs don't have much of a life. So those pigs on your farm, they were cooped up all the time. Did you have any, like, free, kind of relatively free-ranging pigs?
Oh, I said she lived in an area that was primarily pig farming, and they had organic pig farms as well.
Organic? What's an organic pig farm?
Well, they were after what you call it, bad. They had, basically, there'd be a big field, and within that, there'd be pens, and each of these pens was quite small, quite defined, so the pig couldn't move. So they'd move, and then they'd lose their fat.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were in these small, confined pens where they'd sort of slosh around the mud all day.
Wow, sloshed around in mud all day. What's wrong with that?
Are you confining that?
Confining. Well, other than these kind of factory farms, have you studied like pigs when they're kept in the old-fashioned way in pens, you know, kind of wider pens? You haven't seen it? Do the pigs in these very narrow compartments, you say they wallow in mud, right? They like that, yes? Yes. And they eat what's ever thrown in front of them, right? Mm-hmm. Are they allowed interaction with other pigs? Well, in the old-fashioned pig farms, you know, pigs would be together in one pen. That doesn't happen now. So when it's time for when the pig feels the call of nature, then whoever's around, you know, mother, sister, daughter, doesn't matter. The pig is very expressive in terms of eating, sleeping, wallowing in the mud, mating. Sometimes we might wonder how modern human beings aren't that much different. But that's another point. Don't want to get distracted on that. Did you ever think about that, Beth, while you were studying the pigs?
Yeah.
The pigs want partners, and the modern human beings want partners. Yes? Isn't it true? You never thought about it like that, right? No, it's true. The pigs want partners.
They don't want partners the same way that people want partners.
Oh, okay. What do you mean by that? That's a good point. But what can you explain it more? The pigs do not want partners in the same way that people want partners.
Emotional satisfaction.
Have you ever heard the pigs grunt with satisfaction?
I don't know much about that.
But you hear them sometimes grunting with satisfaction? Yes. Who here has heard pigs grunt with satisfaction? Definitely emotional. What do you think, Brad? You ever heard pigs grunt with satisfaction?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're, you know, contented. They make those sounds. In any case, even if you don't want to say that pigs have emotion, you say human beings, when they have partners, they want emotional. And how substantial is that?
I want somebody who is on a pile of fear and moving intensity. Yeah.
You've experienced that?
No, I haven't experienced anyone who's actually on a pile of fear. Sort of like basically it's all of diplomacy and compromising and stuff.
Diplomacy and compromising, why? What do you want with the diplomacy and compromising?
Just want to negotiate so you can sort of make sure that they're getting their enjoyment, sort of like and you're getting your enjoyment, so in a lot of sense it's exploitation.
Equal exploitation. Do you agree with that? Sounds pretty cynical, doesn't it? What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
You agree with that? Oh, it sounds like the pigs have it better. It'll go through all this neurotic, you know, mutual exploitation, equal I'll exploit you, and you can exploit me, and we'll just make sure the exploitation is equal. What do you think? Maybe the pigs have it better. Yeah, I mean, you know, they just grunt with satisfaction. They don't go through all these hang-ups and emotional complexities. They don't have to read relationship books. What do you think?
Consciousness, or, you know, being aware of something more
on a mental and
emotional
level than. All right. And what does that do for you at the end of the day? Makes you feel understood. And how long does that feeling last of being understood? So you would consider that a prime goal in life, to be understood? Okay, let's say you've been understood. Now what? Let's say you, Mr. Wright appears, the partner, and you feel understood. Now what?
If you say that you, you're understood, that means that you're not progressing with it.
Maybe, but what do you say? You've been understood, now what? You just go through your life being understood?
I'm trying to say that you're not really understood because you're not pathetic. Your ideas and perceptions and experiences are changing all the time. So sometimes you're going to be understood and other times you're going to be misunderstood.
Oh, I see. Not being understood is kind of like adding variety, just like you were saying before. Someone else was saying that, Brad, when you're not happy, it helps you appreciate when you were happy. So not being understood helps you appreciate when you did understand or were understood, yes? Then you have to kind of sort it out, sort the relationship out.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're understanding and you're not understanding and you're sorting each other out, and then what?
That's how
life goes?
At the moment, that's how.
So all there is, you know, there's this...
We're not talking ideas, we're talking about the reality.
Yeah, exactly, I agree. So, okay, let's just take you for example. Once again, there you are with the... No. And example, speaking generally. So, there you are with the partner. And you feel understood. And then, of course, there's always days where you don't feel understood and you communicate, I'm not being understood. And he may pick up, he may not. Because generally men, they really don't want to understand. I think you haven't noticed yet. He's blessing. He's an old veteran. You know, man, I don't know what I understand. Anyway, that's another subject. Now, the ladies, they want to be understood. The men, believe me, they don't want to understand. But that's something you'll discover in the future. Anyway, for now, let's just say it does work out according to your plan. You've met someone, and you feel understood. Not simply you, anyone. Now, going to be days where you're not understood, and then you kind of sort each other out, and you understand, or almost understand. Okay, and then what? That's all there is to life? Or then you have kids, and you have they have to understand you, and you have to understand them, so it just expands, is that it? Okay? So not only do you have a partner who should understand you, then you also have kids who should understand you, and you should understand them. So that the network of understanding increases, right? And then you have in-laws and relatives, and you have to understand them. They have to understand you, right? Okay, all this understanding is going on. Okay, then what's the point of all this? I have no idea, but this is what you said. I mean, we're not picking on you, but for example, this is you said this is what you wanted, but you have no idea what the point of all is.
I know that one of the things is completely satisfied.
Huh?
I know that this is what we want. At the moment, we don't have anything else that's satisfied.
Right, very good point. In other words, if you don't know anything better, this is all that there is. So you spend your whole life understanding, being understood, but you didn't really understand. And then what? By the time you're an old lady, and then? If you live a whole life, full life, you're an old lady? You ever talk to old people? So then what? You know, here you are, an old lady.
That's what
you got to have. This is all you have to look forward to? You're rocking in your rocking chair. Yes, I remember. When I was 25, we used to go to a place called Loft. We used to discuss the deep issues, you know. Of course, you know, I got into it a little bit, but, you know, naturally, you know, I got swept away in the stream of life, you know, partner, you know. He didn't marry me after 10 years. You know, a few kids, you know. We got engaged when they came. And, and you know, fulfilling career. I did a lot of community welfare work. Got a certificate on the wall. Yes. So, what can I tell you now? Except be a good person and find someone who can understand you.
You see yourself talking like that?
But isn't that what will come about unless we find something different? Maybe when you're 50, about 20 people who you help, they'll throw a little party for you.
Yeah.
Coffee and donuts. You'll feel real good. Oh, these 20 people who I helped, they were whose life I touched, they threw this coffee and donut party for me. There must be something more than that, yes? What do you think, Brad?
Being old and the whole thing.
Yeah. Can you see yourself as a 60-year-old man pub crawling?
Oh, no. Unless I've seen all the 60-year-olds talking about me. No. I still look at old age as a time to reflect on your life and like sort of run things through your head.
For what purpose? Why?
Everything that's, you know, that you consider was really great or fun or whatever, you have to spend a couple of hours sitting there thinking, yeah?
For what? Why? What's it do for you? You can't do it anymore. Even if you thought it was fun, you're an old man, your body's breaking down.
That gather your thoughts.
And for what? Why? What's the purpose of gathering your thoughts? feel content that, you know, okay, here's Brad, he's 65. I remember those bums. Me and the boys, the babies. Okay, how does that make you feel content? Your body is deteriorating, it's painful old age. Your body cannot, it can't carry out the desires you have. It can't function anymore, according to your plan. So, what is the value of this contentment you might feel? I mean, really, Sarah, don't you think there has to be a bit more than that? Or do you think maybe I'm just being a little, whatever? No, say it.
Well, I think that it comes, I think it comes to sleep as well. Like, there is when you're old, you can take sleep where you're at, you can sleep where you've gotten through, you can feel complete with what you've done with your life, and just as the drill has been able to deal with where you're at a particular stage in your life, and if you deal with it in a long way, then you can sit back and feel content with what you've done and where you're at.
So, Ron, you're closer to that age than she is. Would that be satisfying for you?
Possibly.
Possibly. So you'd be 65, maybe what, 20 years or something?
Possibly, yes.
So that's not too far away, you know? There you are, Ron, you're 65, in this rocking chair, just contented where I'm at. How can you really be contented knowing that you're under the gun of time? It's more obvious now than ever before, and you can't do what you did in the past, and you have no idea where you're going in the future. How can you be contented? It's a very profound statement. She doesn't see why it's a problem that she is 65 and she can't do what she did in the past for so-called enjoyment, so-called fun, Brad's fun, and she can't, it doesn't know where she's going in the future, but that's not a problem. The body is rotting daily.
Well, I don't think 65 I'm going to be sitting down rotting. Basically, I don't think that because suddenly I'm 55, I'm going to retire and stop doing what I've done the rest of my life.
Ah. So you plan to, whatever, you'll be going on with your career.
Yeah.
And then?
Well, if you get my form of fulfillment through what's my, like, I say art teacher, I'm really passionate about art teacher, I'm passionate about the whole process. And I see, like, things like it's a lifelong thing. It's sort of like, as you grow up, so does your forms of architecture, so does your sort of like a form of expression, basically. And as I get older, all I'm going to be is wiser and more knowledgeable and more able to express where I'm at and express what I want to express.
You're sure you're going to be wiser and more knowledgeable?
I think that I'll probably have different difficulties. I think I would have.
Interesting, either. Interesting statements. Now, let's just say architecture. I know a lot of architects. Now, how many architects get to work on that dream project in which they can be creative?
Yeah.
Right. But you have hopes that you're going to be in that select group that gets that project of a lifetime.
Yes, and the idea, obviously, is the ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that working within the restrictions is sort of what we can often enhance or work. And so if there are many restrictions imposed on something, then you are able to
still be creative in spite of it.
Yeah, you don't hope that you get sort of like, you know, over the imposition.
Okay.
And you've achieved something.
All right.
And it's actually helped your process of creativity.
Okay, so let's just say you do get your dream, and you're Sarah the architect, and you've designed some unique buildings, and now you're 65, 70,
yeah.
and your hands are quivering. You can't hold the whatever the architects hold or on the computer. Like you can't, you know. And even if they have voice recognition software for architecture, your voice is so creaky, you know, the computer doesn't recognize it. Okay, now what?
Well, I'm probably in a form of frustration. My computer is going to be frustrated that would happen. So hopefully I would hope that, you know, I would be at a point where I guess it's that.
And then?
Well, then I would find other ways of sort of.
Are you willing to accept that? Why not? Something wrong with you?
Well, it's just a curiosity that will always go through as you need it to go back to having it be that everything just stops.
Yes, the standard of Bhagavad Gita is that if you're a human being, you must, while you're living, research how to put an end to death. According to the Bhagavad Gita standard, a human being doesn't take birth, death, old age, and disease sitting down. You have to do something about it. Otherwise, there's no difference between human life and animal life. You can see yourself just kind of, yeah. It's the way it is. I forgot your name, I'm sorry.
Jeff. I believe that part of reincarnation evolving through bodies.
Okay. Now, Jeff, he's presented that he feels there's a reincarnation, changing bodies, going from one body to another. Now, does that manifest in the way you're living now? Like, I mean, let me put it this way, does that impinge upon your life in any way? That, you know, you think there's going to be another body in the next life? Could you, for our benefit, just elaborate a little more why, you know?
In that process for this to happen in other lives, need not impinge on me experiencing right here, right now.
But let's say, wouldn't you be concerned what your next body would be? And perhaps why not? For the benefit of the folks in TV land.
I think there's a lot of growth to be done in this body, and what, you know, is, I mean, I, this, what will be, but if there's something that
you're willing to leave up to the universe, shall we say?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That makes me want to turn to chapter 13. It's let's see, 13 or 15? All right, 15. Yes. Page 722, please. We'll do some reading of some text here. About two or three texts. Okay, page 722. This is Sanskrit. And then you see the English. So I'll read the Sanskrit verse. Text 8. Shariram yadabhanoti yaschat yutkramatishvaraha grahit vaitani sanyati vaya gandhan evashayat. Would like to read the translation.
The living entity in the material world carries its different conceptions of mind from one body to another, as the air carries the rain. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another.
The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aroma. It's a very interesting concept here. Okay, would you like to read the purport? The purports, for those who don't know, they amplify what the verse says. They don't add anything, they just amplify it. In previous ages, people were intelligent enough to understand Bhagavad Gita without purports. They could see that whatever is in the purport is implicit in the translation, but it's not like that now. Therefore, the purports are there to help you see the obvious.
Here, the living entity is described as
Ishwar,
the controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade. If he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, consciousness he's created will carry him on to the next type of body. If he has made his consciousness like that of a cat or a dog, he's sure to change to a cat or a dog's body. And if he has fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he will change into the form of a demigod. And if he is in Krishna consciousness, he will be transferred to Krishna Loka in the spiritual world and will associate with Krishna. There's a false claim that after the annihilation of this body, everything is finished. The individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body and present activities are the background of his next body. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. It is stated here that a subtle body which carries the conception of the next body develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigrating from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called
Karshati,
the struggle for existence.
Any questions about this? Yeah, any questions? This gives a whole different perspective on what's going on in life. Just take a look at that last sentence. Instead of looking at our life as a process of getting fulfillment, a process of being understood, a process of having fun, instead, what do we see here? This last sentence. This process of transmigrating from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. In other words, what's actually going on is that we're just, as spirit soul, we're moving from one body to another, and in the particular body we have now, we're struggling to fight off distress and attract happiness. So you're getting an overview of how the spirit soul moves from one body to another. And which body you get is up to you. According to your conception at the time of death, you get a certain body. So in that way, you are a controller of your fate to a small degree. The system has already been laid out. And according to your consciousness at the time of death, you get an next body. So an intelligent person is naturally thinking, I want to make sure I get the best kind of body in the next life. There's no guarantee you'll be a human being. Of course, many people say, well, if I become a rat and I forget that I was a human being, what's the problem? But just think how demeaning an existence you're settling for. I don't mind being a rat as long as I forget I was a human. Now, can't we do better than that? So the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to point out you can do better than that. There is something else to aspire for. All right, we'll go to text 9. Srotam chakshu sparshtanam cha rasanam grahanam eva cha adhishtaya manaschayam visayanupasevate. Sarah, would you like to read that translation?
Another interesting, thus taking another gross body, the pains of sleeping type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and physical touch, which are grouped about the mind, he thus enjoys the secular shift of sense.
Yes. So when you say body, you mean senses. Each particular type of body you can get has its set of senses and a corresponding set of sense objects. So the sense objects that a human being tries to enjoy are different, let's say, from what a rat would enjoy. It's supposed to be different. So each body has its niche and its own set of sense objects that it's pursuing with the senses. So according to your mentality, nature puts you in a certain body that is appropriate to your mentality. In that way, you can see that nature is like the perfect hotel. Nature has the perfect room for your particular desires. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Now, how did you get this human body? You got this human body as a chance to use its higher faculties to discuss issues like this and get to the root of them. Otherwise, if we use our human body to do the same things the pigs are doing, in maybe a glorified, polished way, and even these days the polish is fading, what's the use? It's a great tragedy. So Bhagavad Gita here is getting you to focus on the real issues. Just like if you're in the field of finance or business, you've got to focus on the bottom line. What's happening with the bucks? You know, profit, loss, interest, what's happening? But we don't know how to focus on the wealth of the body. We don't know how to deal with the profit and loss in terms of life. We don't know what to focus on. Body, senses, sense objects, conceptions in the mind that bring you from one body to another. These are the things we've got to watch. We have no idea, though. Because a lack of transcendental knowledge, we're spaced out. We're looking every other way except what we should look at. We're looking at dreams of fulfillment, dreams of partnership, dreams of fun, dreams of accepting the way I am, but we never look at the actual resources of our life and what's going on, the dynamics of the situation. The dynamics of the situation are body, senses, sense objects, mentality. And then beyond all that, there's the spirit soul, which has to, by its own mistake, undergo all these experiences. So Bhagavad Gita is equipping you with the basic, with knowledge of the basic resources and components of life. What do you think? Interesting, huh? All right. We'll go now to text 10. Vikramantam stitam vapi bunjanam vadunan vitam vimudananu pashyanti pashyanti gyana chakshusha. You like to read?
Foolish cannot understand how living entities can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this.
Okay, purport.
The word
Yana Chakshusha
is very significant. Without knowledge, one cannot understand how a living entity leaves his present body, nor what form of body he is going to take in the next life. Nor even if he is living in a particular type of body. This requires a great amount of knowledge understood by those people and similar literatures heard from a bona fide spiritual master when I was trying to perceive all of these things as fortunate. Every living entity is pushing his body under certain circumstances. He is living under certain circumstances, and he is enjoying under certain circumstances, under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress under the illusion of sense enjoyment. Persons who are everlastingly filled by lust and desire lose all power to understand the change of body and their stay in a particular body.
Can you read that sentence again?
Persons who are everlastingly pulled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditional life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it, and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting, huh? What do you think, Jack? Been interesting, huh?
Yeah.
It's the whole book's like, huh? What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah.
You ever thought about those things before, huh?
No, I have. I don't really, understand why I should believe in it. Like, I like the idea of it.
Right. Why should you believe that it's relevant whether you believe in something or not? This is a very important thing she said, to understand the process. In other words, what you're saying is that the proof of the pudding is in the taste? Now, if there's a process by which you can experience that you are spirit, soul, and not the body, would that satisfy you?
Possibly, yeah.
Yes. Krishna consciousness is not about belief. It's about process. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you instructions what to do with your body, mind, and senses so that you realize you experience this knowledge. What more can you ask? It's very dangerous to live and just accept with no idea what our next body will be or how we got the present body. This is ignorance. It's not that what you don't know won't hurt you. What you don't know will hurt you. You're leaving yourself at the whims of nature to throw you into whatever body is appropriate for your desires. Now, don't we think that maybe there's something else I should be doing besides being thrown from one body to another? What do you think, Jeff? Might there be something else we're meant to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've got to find out what that absolute is. Absolute. He said absolutely. Absolute means that which doesn't change in any circumstance. We've got to find out what is that. For you, the absolute is as spirit soul, you don't change even though the body changes, even though the mind changes. The absolute is that the spirit soul doesn't change. But simply understanding that your spirit soul is not enough. You must understand the Supreme Soul. That is Krishna consciousness. then when you put those two together, you can start to figure out, what am I doing in this world, thinking I'm this body, and that this temporary world is my home? So this is the real understanding we should try for. Otherwise, you know, emotional affairs come and go. You've had emotional affairs before, right? Yeah, well. They were great in the beginning, right? And then what happened? Why? If it was good, why did it sour? Why not? It was good in the beginning. It was fun. What happened? It was good in the beginning, right? It was like magic, right? Or almost, right? Then what happened? This good thing. Why? It was good. It was fun. What happened? You're being cynical, I think. Yeah. It was good. It was fun. Electricity was flowing. The vibes resonating, relating, exchanging. Permutating with one another. What happened? But if it was good, why didn't it stay good? But if you have no understanding of how the previous good things went sour, what makes you think that, you know, the next one will, you know, will also be like that? Hopeful. Oh, she's honest. Hopeful. This is material existence. Hope against hope. All you get is hope. So when you see the old people walking around the street, they look like they have hope. What do they look like? They're just resigned to not thinking. They're just resigned to... Right? Here. Let's turn to chapter 18. Page 823. We're going to read about the three types of happiness in the material world. Sukham Pradhanam Jividam Shinume Bharatar Shiva Abhyasa Ramate Yatra Yukantam Chandagashati. Ron, would you like to read the translation?
Who basically Bharatas.
Bharatas.
Now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul endures, and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress.
Okay, perfect, yes.
The conditioned soul tries to enjoy material happiness again and again, as he chooses to choose. He sometimes, in the course of such enjoyment, he becomes relieved from material entanglement by association with the great soul. In other words, a conditioned soul is always engaged in some type of sense gratification, but when he understands by good association that it is only a repetition of the same thing, and he's awakened to his real Krishna consciousness, he is sometimes relieved from such repetitive social happiness.
So, any questions about that? Repetitive so-called happiness? How about this graphic expression, thus he chews the chewed? Everyone knows what that means? Yeah? Just imagine. You're at a cafe with your partner. TSO, temporary snipping another. You know, and you're chewing on whatever you're chewing, whatever you're eating at the cafe. You chew it very thoroughly. What do the doctors call it? Masticate? Yeah. You're masticating very thoroughly. All the molars are probably grinding the food after the incisors have shredded it up, you know. And so, you know, you just chew and chew. If you're really conscious about your chewing process, you know you have to chew the food so many times, and that makes it easy to digest. So, you've done that. You're very conscientious about your chewing. So, but instead of swallowing, at the last moment, you reach your fingers into your mouth, you pull out a thoroughly chewed food, and you hand it to your partner. Here, I have chewed. Now you take. You please enjoy. That's what it means to chew that which has already been chewed. All the taste is gone. All the relish is gone. So generation after generation, it's simply chewing the chew. Your parents chewed it, their parents chewed it, their grandparents chewed it, now they're handing it down to you. That which has already been chewed, and you're going to chew it. Yeah, your great-grandparents chewed it, and they're handing it down the family line. Jeff, now it's your chance. Take this which has been so thoroughly chewed for 100 countless generations, now you try for it.
It's still priceless.
Yeah, but you're still, man, but still we try for it, you know? Hope, as you say. Hope. I'm going to chew. I'm going to get some juice out of it. When you're having your banquet tonight, just chew something and then, you know, just pull it out of your mouth and take a look at it. And then think whether you would just pass it to the next person. But that's material life. So your hope is simply that I'm going to be the one to get some juice out of what has already been chewed for countless generations. So when you see these old people shriveled up, bent over, heading to death, you should know this is what they've done. They've invested their whole life into chewing that which has already been chewed.
What about individual growth?
Well, everybody's body is growing. But what does growth actually mean?
I mean, like, within your mind.
Within your mind? But, you know, you think that the mind is just constantly moving in a progressive way?
Yeah.
You look around in society, you think that's happening? That minds are constantly moving in a progressive way?
No, I think that we have to put energy into the life as well.
Mm-hmm. And then? But what's the goal of this so-called progress of the mind? Like for yourself, what would you see would be the goal? What would you see as the goal of your mental progress?
Goal.
And how can there be progress then without a goal?
Because it's satisfaction in the process.
Satisfaction just moving in an aimless direction.
No, because it's directional and like you're making positive effort towards it, you're directing it in a particular area of interest.
Okay, a particular area of interest means there must be some kind of goal. Like, okay, architecture. That would be your field of mental progress?
Yeah, but it looks like personal growth as well.
Personal growth. But, once again, remember these texts we've been reading. While you're imagining personal growth, you're simply getting old and you're dying, and what happens next you don't know while you're hung up on all these, you know, phantasmagoric concepts, you know? Sure, that's what's well, it's happening, yes, your body is getting older, yes? Okay, so regardless of whatever phantasmagoria you're seeing, the fact is, yeah, pretty soon you're either going to, the body's either going to be ashes or dust. Yeah, so what's the point of all this, you know? But the animals are doing that. The pigs are doing that. They're the expert at living at the moment, for the moment. Oh, yes. Have you ever seen lambs in the special lambs that are kept away from the rest of the sheep? They have a special area, and it's planted in rows of very succulent greens, like swedes. Yeah. You ever seen sheep farms have this special area for the lambs, the special lambs, and row after row, maybe it's 3 acres, 4 acres, a special fenced off area where the other sheep can't get to. The other sheep are just foraging on the mountains and the valleys, you know, eating brown grass and shrubs. But these lambs in this special fenced off area, 3 or 4 acres, they have actually succulent vegetables with very succulent tops planted row after row. You ever seen that? You seen? Oh, yes. I've seen. Yes. It's a word. What is it called? It's called a finishing plot or something like that. So, I looked at those lambs. They are in ecstasy. Their coats are so shiny because they're eating. So, you know, they're eating so well. They're banqueting. They're practically laying down on, you know, just, they can't, you know, they're just dazed, you know, like, you know, they're just thinking. In one sense. This it can't be any better than this. This is what it's all about. The other sheep, you know, they're foraging, you know, mountains, going up looking for fresh grass, you know, valleys, you know. Yeah, sheep, they just eat all day and all night. They practically don't even sleep, do they? You never study sheep, you know? There are more sheep than people in New Zealand. I've studied sheep. They just eat 24 hours. They don't sleep. So, but this special area for the lambs, all the food is just laid out in the banquet. Row after row, these succulent greens called swedes, very, very succulent tops. It's a root crop, but, you know, it gives off a very succulent green top. That's what the lambs eat. It's all in the row. They don't have to do anything for it. They don't have to forage roaming up mountains and, you know, sheep farms are. No, it's all right there, row after row. They're in a daze. They're just, oh, this is heaven. This is great. But why are they there? Who knows?
If you call it a finishing pen, it's the end of their life.
Yeah, why do they get that special treatment? Yes, because some people want priceless tender veal. So the farmer, knowing that market is there, he takes his best lambs and he gives them the best diet to make their flesh very tender. Now, the lambs, they're not thinking that. The lambs, oh, they're in ecstasy. You can practically, if you ever see such a place, you'll see that they practically, you can see the smile on their face. You know, it couldn't be better than this. This is what it's all about. We've made it. We've got it made. It's all in the row for us. You've seen in Switzerland? They don't have sheep in Switzerland, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a special area. And you know, the cows are a little bit more intelligent, though. Cows can sense that they're going to be slaughtered. Sheep, you know. Sheep don't understand until they get right up to where the slaughterer is. You take sheep to the slaughterhouse, and you go up a ramp, They'll still, if it's the right season for the sheep, they'll be mating right even on the ramp. You know, and no idea, you know, what's just a few meters ahead. Only when they get right up to where the slaughter is, they start freaking out. Otherwise, no idea. Cows, farmers know that cows, they realize they're meant for slaughter. But you'll never know that because you've probably never seen cows that aren't going to be slaughtered. There's a huge difference. Sheep, they don't have a clue. So these lambs, they're in these finishing blocks because they're not going to grow up. They're going to be fed the most succulent food, and then right at the right age, when they're young, they're not going to grow up. They're taken and slaughtered, and that's where you get veal from. But the sheep, you know, they're just living for the moment. Yeah, this is what it's all about. We're feeling fulfilled. We're happy. We're having fun. So what is the difference between our life and these lambs? We're saying the same thing. I just want to be fulfilled. I just want to have fun. But you see these lambs, they're having fun. All the best food laid out in the ground right in front of them, row after row, all neatly in rows. Sometimes I saw they just laying dazed on the ground, like totally stoned, like, wow. Now, if human beings live like that, this is a great disaster. Okay, we're not the same as lambs. We have this higher consciousness, but what are we doing with that consciousness? Otherwise, the body is deteriorating. Regardless of what you think about this or that, the body will break down. And there's death. Then what? The intelligent person can't accept that. You've got to do something about it. You've got to find out what to do about it. Simply living for the moment, that's the same as the lambs in the finishing block. What do you think, Jeff? Possible or?
Possible what? Or not?
So what I was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that right now.
See yourself as a lamb in one of those spots?
No, but...
No, try to. Try to see yourself as a lamb. You're a lamb.
I just realized that this is a figure.
Yeah. Jeff the lamb, he's in the plot, and the farmer's just laying it all out in front of you, row after row of banquets. Your coat is so shiny and soft because you're eating the best food. You're there with all your mates. Farmer's looking at you very lovingly. Yeah, just look at Jeff. Sometimes a farmer comes out every once in a while and weighs, you know, make sure all his high-powered food stuff, luxury food stuff is having the desired effect. He's checking out your growth of weight, you know. And the little lamb is probably thinking, oh, I'm getting such nice treatment. You can see the farmer. Jeff, lamb, let us weigh you. Oh, yes. Right. So picking up weight very nicely. Then one day a truck comes. You think you're going for a ride. A pleasure ride. Pull up at this huge place. You can't read, so you don't see the signs. This freezing works. You're put into these various holding pens, and then you let up a ramp. Only when you get to the top of the ramp, you understand what's happening. It's too late. But you live for the moment, at Jeff the Lamb, live for the moment. Well, accepting.
If you knew better, though, you were living for the moment, then, you know, you knew and had experienced it in a whole bigger way. Through this spiritual practice, it's, you in the moment comes and goes, and you can be present in it. So there is a certain aspect, I feel, of living in the moment, bringing a consciousness to the moment, which is very... oblivious kind of wallowing in green sprouts and nice fields is really has, nothing, because you have your fill, at some stage you have your fill or whatever.
Okay, instead of being conscious of green sprouts and a nice field, what should you be conscious of to make that moment full?
Consciousness of... I have my own, it's the consciousness of unity, which is what I do with spiritual practice anyway. So
unity, and how far does this unity extend?
Really, it's not as far as anywhere but inside, internally, and experience.
But, okay, in terms
of time, the spaceless kind of experience, I think.
Now, exactly how do you experience that unity that's beyond time and space?
I've had experience in meditation. It's been very hugely, and that's what's confirmed it for me is through experience and a process as opposed to a belief that it verifies.
Now, is unity personal or impersonal?
Impersonal.
You've seen examples of unity coming about impersonally before. Unity is related to unify. Now, how can impersonal unify?
The experience of the unity was, at the time, impersonal.
But you are personal.
That's right.
So what?
And this is the thing that, this is the process of coming to unity.
So you're a person coming to the impersonal. Now there seems to be a bit of disharmony there. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to become impersonal? Is that the goal? Then there'll really be unity? Huh? Everything will be impersonal? You like that?
The details of it, like when I talk about it, it's still, sorting through, but the experience of it is...
Of losing yourself. So your goal then is to kind of unite with the impersonal. Why?
Because it's... It feels right. The experience.
To give up, to not be a person anymore, feels right.
Yeah, or to bring, to experience that, I still sort of...
To be a person, but no, to be impersonal means no person. Can't have it both ways.
Yeah, or to bring that personal value to my person.
To bring what?
The impersonal value to my person.
How can you do that?
Personal value in myself.
You are a person. Now, what are you going to do about that? Right. It's a problem.
it's kind of... What am I going to do about my person, you say?
Yeah. How can you unify with the impersonal when you're a person?
Well, the process through... through real or experiencing personal becomes, I think, harmonized with it, impersonal.
A person can be impersonal, but still you're always a person. It takes a person to be impersonal. So therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, I'm the basis of this impersonal feeling of unity. It's founded on person. It's like you can be impersonal when you want to be impersonal.
Yeah.
You give somebody a cold shoulder, you turn the ice on. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita explains this impersonal experience you might have had is founded upon person. So you've got to go further past that experience of impersonal unity, quote unquote, and get to the person at the basis of it. That is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you won't solve the riddle of what it means to be a person. And you just think, I've got to annihilate myself, and then there'll be peace and harmony and unity.
I think the impersonal, you know, whether words as such, but
you find the impersonal, quote unquote, attractive?
You know, the unity value of it is wonderful, but whether it's impersonal or personal is just the words to the experience, you know?
No.
The feeling of, like, you know, knowing or having the experience of unity. You know, realizing that you are the kind of. It is you anyway, so it's the relationship with.
But you, when you say you, you're talking personal, so that's not just words. You're not impersonal, you're a person. Now, how are you going to cope with that? How can you unite with the impersonal when you're a person? You may have your impersonal moods, but those impersonal